there is nobody better to take a risk on and bet on than yourself.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I'm so excited to have my next guest here. I have Kate Luzio, who is not only an incredible entrepreneur, but also an amazing human and friend. And we got to know each other on this list that we are a part of. So that was really, really fun. And she has just got an amazing story. She actually, like me, came from a totally different industry. She wasn't in the space that she's in now. She was in finance and banking, investment banking, at amazing locations, including Bank of America, JP Morgan, HSBC. And she actually spent 20 years there and then decided, I'm going to go reinvent myself and do something incredible, which she did. And she started an amazing space in New York City called The Luminary, which we're going to get to hear a lot about. And I think that there's so many things that I feel like Kate can talk to us about, not only switching industries, but also entrepreneurship, you know, women in the workplace, also just challenges of, you know, what happens when you run into a pandemic and, you know, all those kind of things. So anyway, welcome. So thrilled that you are here and really, really excited to have you here. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
No, this is great. I'm so excited, Kara.
Absolutely. So just going back to kind of where you started. So you grew up East Coast,
New Jersey, Jersey girl. Yep.
Jersey girl. Awesome. I was laughing at your social media the other day that you just got your driver's license reinstated.
Yes.
So
yes.
you were living all over the world and lost your license and you got it back. So congrats.
29 years, literally almost like 2 weeks to the day of when I first got my license. And the funniest part is that in New Jersey, you get your license when you're 17. My mom drove me to that because I couldn't drive. And my mom drove me to this appointment. So yes, what I will say is never let your driver's license expire, ever.
It's so true. In fact, I was just saying my passports are all expiring for my whole little crew. And I was saying, we got to just get on that and not allow that to, you know, become a major issue, especially in today's day and age. And who knows when things are open, when they're not open.
Exactly.
Talk to me a little bit about your career. So you grew up in New Jersey. And then what was the first job for Kate?
I grew up in New Jersey. My dad was an FBI agent. My mom's a teacher and I have a brother on each side. So I tell people I wasn't raised like a girl. I was raised like a competitor. I was sandwiched in between the middle. And from a very early age, it was like, you know, as soon as you could work, you're going to get a job. And that's just what you did, right? It also taught you the value of a dollar and work ethic. And so my first real job where I was actually getting, you know, a paycheck was Foot Locker. And I was drawn to Foot Locker because I was an athlete and I wanted to get discount on shoes, on sneakers. So that is it. And then I ended up throughout high school, kind of triple jobbing it. I worked at Foot Locker, I worked as a lifeguard, and I also worked in a bakery on the weekends because my father was like, listen, we're going to pay for your college, which is a huge privilege. After that, you are on your own. So start saving now.
Good for him. Great advice. Super great advice. And so you graduated from school. Did you always know that you wanted to go into banking?
Hell no. It was the last thing I would have ever thought of. I was a political science major at University of Maryland. I had studied abroad. I loved international. I really thought I was going to go work for the State Department or even follow my dad's footsteps and at the FBI. And then when I graduated, it was like, wait a second, I don't want to do this. I did a bunch of internships in the political realm. And then it was the internet boom, the first internet boom that you were a part of as well, right? So a lot of these younger kids don't realize that there was one, the original internet boom. And so I was working in a nonprofit and, you know, there were all these internet startups in the DC area were hiring young kids. And so I got a job at a great startup, little company in Northern Virginia. And then long story short, I went to China with them, didn't know anything, but learned a ton, came back after working there on and off for 2 years, decided to get my master's degree at night. I couldn't afford to quit my job because Georgetown's tuition was so expensive. And so worked at the startup, continued to do my master's. And then when I was graduating, a bank recruited me. And I remember thinking, are you kidding me? I don't even know how to balance my checkbook. Please don't look at my credit score. And they said, listen, we can teach you all the technical stuff. We love your background and you've gone to great schools, blah, blah, blah. Just come and try it. And lo and behold, almost 20 years later, I was still in banking.
That's wild. So which was the first bank that you worked at?
So the first bank was a bank called MBNA. Mm-hmm. Many people will remember it as an affinity credit card company, very focused on consumer. Within 2 years, if not even less, me working there, I was moved to Mexico. I was launching a new bank in Mexico, a joint venture, and then Bank of America bought us. So I went from working at a 10-person startup to a 22,000 employee bank to Bank of America was at the time over 200,000.
Wow.
And so very quickly got ingrained into that really big corporate culture. I spent many years at B of A, mainly in Latin America, was recruited to JP Morgan in the beginning of the financial crisis, moved to London, thinking I was going to stay there for 2 years, stayed there for seven, and then was recruited by HSBC, stayed there for a couple of years, and then decided that I was going to, you know, do something more stable. And that was entrepreneurship.
That's awesome. You mentioned somewhere in my research that you mostly had male mentors in the baking industry, all of them. And wow, that's wild. Now, how did you find your mentors?
You know, I have to say that I really think there's a lot of this, they found me. And for the sheer reason of I was visible, I raised my hand, I was out there with, you know, taking risks. I was one of the people sort of saying, give this to me, I'll try it. I want to learn and not thinking so much about making mistakes just around, hey, I got to learn everything I possibly can. And I think some of that shone through when I first got into banking because I didn't have the financial background that my peers did. I came in many years after that or a couple of years after that. And so I felt like I had to learn faster, learn more and work really hard. And I think that was just picked up on and that I got shit done.
Yeah.
And so the guys, my mentors, my sponsors liked that. And there was just like, I'm just going to get it done and I'm going to do it in a way where I'm building stakeholdership and navigating the firm and making connections. And so I think that was that there was a lot of that they found me. But listen, I wasn't a shrinking violet, right? I was voicing my opinion around the table. I was asking for more opportunities. I was out there talking about let me do more. And I think they saw that. And so I think it was, I always say it's a little bit of a push and a pull. And I also had bad managers and bad guys in my life, but these particular, there's about five of them in particular that and they've stayed my mentors that I still trust and lean on. And you know, there weren't that many women in senior roles either.
Yeah.
When I started, there still aren't, but there were less. And so you really also had to know who had the influence and power within the firms that you work for. And it's important to have that.
It's so interesting hearing you talk about this, because one thing that we hire a lot of people right out of school. And oftentimes what I see is that, you know, you're not getting sort of the structured kind of environment, which is good and bad, right? And
yes.
I feel like I've worked in places that are super structured, super buttoned up, where you have to communicate. And I think banking, you know, we could say there's a lot of bad in banking or whatever. Yeah. But I think that the one thing I think that you really learn in some of these corporate cultures, like the ones that you worked in, is, you know, communication, even if it's over communication, right? Yes. And sort of like very buttoned up, very, you know, not just texting, hey, what's up? You know, thanks a lot kind of thing.
Right.
It's like, dear Kara, or things like that. And you can never go wrong. Would you say that? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. I think you learn a level of professionalism, understanding your audience, executive presence, and then also that structure and framework. You also can understand, what does that career path look like? Right? Maybe you veer off of it, but you certainly have, and this is in for lots of parts of the finance world. And I really like that structure. People will tell me, like, you don't seem like you could have had a boss. I actually thrived in a corporate culture because I think the fact that I was an athlete growing up and I was a great student, and I like that you're doing a good job, or here's your feedback, now go do better.
Yeah.
Working in a smaller company, being on an entrepreneur, you don't necessarily have all that. I think it's the sooner companies can put that, a semblance of that in a place, the better, especially for young talent.
I love it. So you decide to leave after 20 years, you decide to recreate yourself. There's probably a lot of people listening, especially ones that are, you know, really trying to rethink their careers, and can they actually go do something? As you know, I wrote a book, Undaunted, that you so kindly have interviewed me on a few different platforms for. But I feel like there are people that put up walls in front of themselves to say, I can't possibly go do that because I've been in this industry. That's sort of like a dream that I would go and open up a workplace like Luminary. But I think that is something that I always like to bring on guests who can actually share their story. Like, why did you do it? And overall, I mean, how'd the idea come to you, and how did you do it?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a couple of lessons that I've learned, and a lot of it comes from those mentors that I mentioned, and certainly my father and my parent, my mom. But number one is, you can always go back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So whether you move within a company, an industry, or go out and do something completely different, if you've built up a resume, if you've built up a reputation, and you've shown results, you can always go back. And
I agree.
So there was part of that. Right. The other thing is, there is nobody better to take a risk on and bet on than yourself. Right. I am not going to not succeed. Right. I may fall down and pick myself back up millions of times, but I'm going to continue to grow and learn and get better. And if this company doesn't work out, I can do something else.
Just, you can always go back. Yeah.
You can always go back. And so I think for me, I have, just because of the way I was raised, there's always been that inherent, like, take a risk, and you know yourself better than anyone else. And so many people will think, oh, you had this idea, you know, was this your side hustle? I'm not a side hustle person. I'm like all in. So I quit banking, as I say, or I left banking. Who knows if I'll ever go back. And it really, there was no idea in my head to start a company. I was thinking I was going to go work for another company and do a completely different role. And 2 months later, as a woman, and you know this, Kara, you can join tons and tons of women's events. And I was like, this is not working. I'm not meeting new people. I'm getting exposed to the same people. And I don't want to just have inspiration. I want to actually learn. And I wrote a business plan. And 9 months later, we opened our physical doors. 14 months later, we hit a pandemic. And now we're a global digital, you know, platform for women, with also now having our physical space in New York. And if you would ask me in March of 2018, when I created that business plan, the reason I wrote that business plan was, I said, there's got to be a better way to convene and invest in and build women without excluding men, right? And so Luminary was, we want to build a community. We want to give programming and content so that women can actually determine, create their own definition of success versus what everyone else is telling them. And we decided very early in that business plan, I wasn't going to just work with individuals like you and I was going to work with companies because that's where you can move the needle. And you and I coming from big companies and industries, that's where a lot of the talent is and they leave. And so we've got to invest in them much earlier before we say they're senior, and that's particularly women.
Well, I love the content that you have too, because it really is about being a lifelong learner, because that is so important. And I think it's something, unfortunately, I've spoken on a few college campuses and in business schools and really been kind of hammering this home that I think it's something that people don't think about, that basically you're graduating from school or, you know, undergrad or business school, and then you get into the workforce and then suddenly it's like, you know, you come in at a certain level and your goal is to get to the next level. And that's what you think about all day long. Instead, it really is about learning. And you need to be even learning when you're a CEO. You need to be learning when you're 20 years in an industry, right? Where you've got to go. And if you feel like it's really not interesting to you anymore, or you're tapped out on this or whatever, why not go and reinvent yourself? I mean, it's what I did with the beverage industry and sort of what I was passionate about around health. And, you know, this whole new world opened up to me that I just hadn't even really thought about or cared about, frankly, you know, for many years. I was always kind of healthy. So I thought, you know, this is what I do, until I wasn't, right? And then you start to really care about it. So you wrote the business plan, you knew how to do that. And then how did you raise the capital?
I didn't raise any capital.
None.
So none, zero.
That's amazing. So
back to that lesson, my dad, you know, I talked about my dad saying, save, save, save. So, and also, you know, I worked really hard in my career and had the privilege, because I say this all the time, not everybody can self-fund and their business, but I'm not manufacturing anything. Yes, I have a huge space and that's a big capital, but I saved a lot of money.
Yeah.
And when I wrote the business plan, and I, you know, I built businesses at JP Morgan and HSBC and Bank of America. I knew how to build a business. I had infrastructure around me, but I knew how to build a business. I said, well, wait a second. I know this is going to take that much longer if I try to go out and raise money. I also know, being a banker, what all the goods and the bads are. And I decided, you know, back to that risk-taking, I understand what I want to build. I understand being a woman in the workforce. And I want to build what I think women are looking for. And I think a lot of people that I would have talked to, and I know this, but a lot of them white men, wouldn't have understood. And so went through, built my financial projections and said, I'm going to do this on my own until I can't. And hopefully the business will be pretty quickly self-sustaining. And that ended up happening. And so, yeah, no debt. And really, when the pandemic hit, that was so pivotal for us, because I didn't have to go and talk to a board. I have an advisory board, but I didn't have to go talk to a board. I didn't have to go to my investors and say, here's where we're at. I could really be nimble. The team could react quickly. I could make tough decisions, and we had liquidity and we had no debt. I'm not saying it's not hard. It's still hard, but we were able to rethink and adapt to the situation versus there's kind of this monkey on my back telling me I've got to do this X, Y, Z. I think the last thing that I would say is the reality is I didn't want to grow for the sake of growing. I wanted to grow a sustainable and profitable company. And that's what we're doing. And that's on our terms. And I could actually listen to my customers and continue to deliver what they wanted versus what someone was telling me I needed to do.
I love that. No, that's so, so super great. So obviously the pandemic hit, you know, what do you see? I mean, hopefully we're coming out of it now. And obviously you're in New York City, where, you know, it's an urban environment. What are sort of your crystal ball projections for all?
You know, we had to shut down for a couple of months because of the lockdown here in New York. And that allowed us, honestly, silver linings. We knew we needed to continue to be there for our community that we had built thus far and the corporate members that we had. So going online for us was incredible. It accelerated our growth dramatically. great. And we will always now have a virtual and a digital platform. And now we have members around the world. But I know that people want to come back, right? And but they want it on their terms. So because we work with so many companies, there is a big, you know, I guess, discussion happening right now. Like, are people going to come back full time? Are they going to want hybrid? What we think is events like we knew them, Kara, the 500 person events, the 200 are not going to come back for a really long time. I think you're going to see small events start popping up. I think companies are going to try to do more to bring in their employees back into the office, create some sense of team building. But I do think everything that we're hearing from all the companies that we work with and even the small business owners is that there will never be a, I have to be in the office 5 days a week again. And if there is, if that's your requirement, people will likely leave. They want some type of flexibility. So we're also seeing more and more of our members and our corporate members coming back into the Luminary space, whether they've been vaccinated, whether they just want to get out of their apartments, right? Like you said, we're in an urban city, very small quarters. People have been, I don't know how moms and dads have been doing it in the city. I really don't, because I can barely sit on a Zoom at my apartment with my boyfriend and we're in the same room in the part in the, you know, yeah, two hard. Bedroom because it's so I think you'll slowly and surely see that. I think New Yorkers by nature want to be out, and as warmer weather comes, you know, but we still have to remember that we're still in a pandemic.
Yeah.
So I think the I always say just being ready to adapt to whatever comes, you know, and come out swinging, because, you know, we're all in this together and the playing field has been somewhat level.
Yeah, I totally agree. So would you say, like, I mean, you talked about having online events and really having an online content play that's not going to go away. Do you think that was kind of the biggest lesson when you look back on that time that nobody that I know really actually predicted a pandemic? Maybe you've got some scientists out there that will say, oh, they totally did. But I think nobody that I knew really did. One thing I talk about a lot is that and I talk about it in my book, the 2008-2009 financial crisis,
right?
That was incredibly hard. I mean, not only for me personally and for so many other people, but as a small business owner, I felt like I had a knife in my stomach, like through that whole thing. Like it was a nightmare. And I sort of compartmentalized it as, okay, that was a really challenging time. I'll remember it, but I'll try not to remember it kind of thing. Right. Like, and I didn't really know what lesson I learned from it. And then when the pandemic hit, the first thing that I said to my CFO was, I got to have 2 years of money in the bank. We did raise money. And, you know, through the course of our 16-year run. And it was, I remember 2008, 2009, the reason why it was so scary was we didn't have enough runway and money in the bank. And I will never go there again. And if I can help it. And so I said at the end of March, when the world or the US was shutting down, I said to my CFO, we've got to raise money. And we need 2 years worth of capital. And he said, everybody's been sent home. We're on virtual. This probably isn't going to happen. And I said, we cannot allow something like Zoom to prevent us, be our wall. That's a platform. Yeah. It's a tool. It's a technology play. And so we went out and raised money. But that was because of that really challenging time, that really scary time. So what I always encourage people to do is look for your scary times, right? And what did you do? What did you do wrong? What did you wish you would have done? Would you say that having an online presence was yours, or what would you say to that?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because if I go back to my business plan, we didn't even talk about digital. Mm-hmm. Right. It was all about this in-person experience and convening. And I think, you know, lesson learned, being able to serve, impact, help more people is always better. I don't think it was a mistake that we didn't have that, because I really needed to focus. I mean, we were 13 months old when the pandemic hit. We weren't, super established, and we're still finding our way. We're still developing who we are in the brand. But I think for me, it was the first thing we did was listen to the community and listen to those are our customers, right? I think the second thing I did was I knew because I watched companies through the financial crisis because I banked them go through the hardest times. And to your point that cash is king, right? So my COO, who's incredible, and I literally sat down, went through every expense. This was even before our doors were shut and said, we've got to call every single vendor and renegotiate our contract. From American Express to our landlord, right? And with the exception of one, they all renegotiated with
us. That's awesome.
And so, you know, that gave us a cushion. Obviously, we went through PPP and then really had to redefine, you know, what are those other revenue streams that we could tap into? And, you know, we lost 80% of our revenue in the 3 months that we were shut down.
Wow.
And so it was hard. It still is hard because you're still building and there's not a safety net behind there. So we, you know, as a team, we had to be really nimble and really think outside of the box around what we could do to continue to build the company while also sustaining. And, you know, I say this all the time, it's not just about getting a check, right? There's so many grants and that's wonderful, but you have to know what to do with that check if you're going to continue to sustain and then build your business. And so we got that PPP and said, all right, this has got to go to our employees, but we've also got to figure out how to make this last a long way. I also have a great team who, you know, none of this happens, like, you know, alone. And they have been just, I mean, stepped up to the plate every single day.
That's awesome. I love, love, love hearing that. So you guys are in New York City. And how has New York been in terms of supporting you as a small business?
Yeah, you know, I think it's been interesting. There are so many businesses that have gone out of business and we've actually said we're surviving. So give the help to the companies that really need it, especially the restaurants. And I've sort of deprioritized. I've actually been saying how much more can we support the small businesses in New York? And so
I love it.
You know, we created a fellowship program that's now global. And I actually think that this is a turning point for New York. And we're going to come out of this stronger, like we did 9/11, and hopefully rebuild these businesses back better than they were before.
I love it. I mean, just in comparison, I've talked to a few other San Francisco and Bay Area companies. As you know, San Francisco has been hit very hard.
Yes.
And you know, it's interesting. I was just talking to my friend Julie Wainwright from The Real Real.
Yeah.
And she pulled out of the Bay Area and, you know, really felt like she had been supported by New York and New Jersey way more than California. And and just, if you guys want to listen to her podcast, I had her on a couple of months ago and it was really fascinating because she talked about, you know, during challenging times, it's really important for the cities and for the states to kind of step up, not necessarily monetarily, but trying to really kind of hear out small business owners at all levels of small businesses. And
at all levels.
Right? Because there are different problems for different industries. And it's not just about the mom and pop shops. Definitely those need some help as well. But I think it's also the people that are, you know, kind of running real businesses and some of the issues that are real challenges and checking in with them. And anyway, it was just, it was, she ended up moving her California part of her business to Arizona. And like there are states, whether it's Texas or Nashville, not that Nashville is a state, but Tennessee or whatever it is, people are like, some of these states are showing up.
I totally agree. And I think you know, no offense to New York, I think they have to do better.
Yeah.
Right. I do. And I think that they can, as we head into an election, right, later this year with our mayor, I think there's a real opportunity to run this city like a business and support the businesses that are bringing in a huge amount of tax revenue and economic, you know, dollars as well as recovery. And if you don't get the community and the small businesses that opportunity, you will lose Like, we know this, right? Every small town in America, we've seen it. So New York has to really step up. And I'm hoping that however the mayoral election turns out, we get a mayor that's out there and really talking on behalf of small businesses, and as well as a governor.
Yeah, I absolutely love that and totally, totally agree. And, you know, as I always say, there's a big space between the unicorns and, you know, the 1 to 10 people that are there in a business. There's this other group that sort of gets forgotten, especially during, you know, easy times, hard times. And so you have to check in with those people and really see what's going on, because they may be public companies as Julie's is or whatever, but it's like, it's real pain points. And I just encourage all cities and states, if people are listening, that it's just really, really critical to check in on that. But
all the way down to paid leave and everything that we're discussing about return to the office, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not just, and we love our partners like JP Morgan and Verizon and others. It's also about businesses that don't have huge budgets, that don't have, you know, big benefit plans. How do you think about return to the office for safety? How do you think about paid leave and everything that, you know, we're trying to solve by public policy, which we should. Employers and city governments and state governments have to start working together as well.
I totally agree. Well, Kate Luzio, so thrilling to have you on. There's so many little nuggets in this conversation. And where can people find you and find Luminary?
Yes. So you can find Luminary on social at Be A Luminary. So it's literally at Be A Luminary. And then online, website is luminary-nyc.com. Don't let the NYC fool you. We're now global. New York City's just our headquarters. And then for me, you can find me at Kate Luzio, whether that's LinkedIn, Instagram, it's all the same. And Kate's with a C, CateLuzio.
That's awesome. And everyone, come back and visit us for amazing founders and CEO interviews every Monday and Wednesday now. And we are thrilled to have great people like Kate on. Please give her 5 stars and great reviews on all the rest of them too. And we will see you soon. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Kara. Thank you.
Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.